Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hello, everyone. It is Saturday morning on WJFF, and it is time for Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
As you know, we go all over the world talking to some of my best and most interesting friends. This week, we're talking to Mary Thompson Hunt, who is an actress who you might recognize from Earth to the Moon on HBO, the film Soap Dish. She's been on Saturday Night Live with Mary Tyler Moore, and she performed with me for many years at Disney's Comedy Warehouse on Pleasure Island. We're going to be talking about comedy, improv, life lessons you learn from those things, and diversity in performance. Please welcome Mary Thompson.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for having me here.
Well, I'm so excited that you can join us. You know, one of the stories I want to talk about right away, Mary, is I remember being so touched back when we used to talk about what brought us into the performing life. And you told a wonderful story about your experiences with Disney as a younger girl and what you wanted to give other people. Would you mind talking about that story a little bit?
Well, my parents wanted us to travel, and Mom took us to Disney World. But I think I probably told you, if this is what you're talking about, there wasn't anyone that looked like us in the shows or even as many people working there. They were lovely. They were mostly Caucasian and blonde. Some might have been brunette. I guess that was their diversity there. I just didn't see, unless I was, maybe someone was wiping down the mirror in the bathroom or something, and they had people of color. But that's what I kind of remember. To be honest with you, it just struck me. But who would have thought that there would be a day when it would be Disney at Walt Disney Land and Disney World? And I was one of the changers, myself and Jim Broswell, where yeah. At the time, before the cast of Lion King came in, it was all pretty much blonde hair, blue eyes, and sometimes brunettes. And that was, ooh, they were getting crazy. But yeah, so things have grown up and changed in our world, including the world of Disney.
So, Mary, what do you think about how you grew up or your personality didn't get shut down by the lack of diversity, but instead found inspiration?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My mom said, when there isn't a road, you pave your own route. So you do what you have to do to get where you have to get. And you know, I was born in 58, right? So by the time I was older, things were starting to change in our world and how we, I mean, look, I was alive during the first African-American president of the United States. A lot of things have changed. And Disney changed. When I started there, it was myself and Jim Broswell, we were the only two African-Americans, and then the cast of Lion King came in. And you want to know one time I'm very proud of? One day I went to see the Lion King, and they had in the chorus this one white girl, blonde hair. And I was like, well, all right, because it's got to go both ways. And that was pretty cool. I just thought, you know, yeah, it's a start, where after a while, it's about your talent and your heart and your intentions in this world more than how you came out, which you had no say in.
Now, speaking of diversity, one of the things that's been very exciting about your career is you've had great variety in the Disney playground, right? You have worked at several of the theme parks. You were involved with the American Idol initiative. And I think one of the most exciting things you did was represent the company for Black History Month, where you had the opportunity to interview notable performers of color during Black History Month. Do you want to share any stories about that?
Oh, sure. What an honor that was. I got to sit down and hang out with Ben Vereen, who's the reason I became an actor. I saw Pippin like 12 times when I was in high school. I'd just go into the city, see a matinee, and wait around, say, "Hi, Mr. Vereen." You know, years later, I'm interviewing him and I'm telling him that story, and he could not have been more wonderful.
So, Mary, in addition to Ben Vereen, my goodness, I came to so many of those talks, and you're such an amazing interviewer. You talked to Jim Brown, you talked to Nell Carter, you talked to Diane Carroll. Do you have any stories about any of those legends or how it felt against your goal of diversity to be spokesperson for those incredible conversations?
It was pretty amazing. I took them very seriously too. I told this to Diane Carroll. I was told, "Miss Carroll, during her breaks, would prefer not to talk. She likes to save her voice. And if you need anything, you can come to me and I'll go to her." And I'm fine. I called him Otto in my head. She was nothing like that. In fact, during one of the interviews, she stopped. She goes, "Now, where are you getting these questions from?" And I went, "Well, I looked you up. I was curious about these things. I thought the guests might be." And then they kind of applauded a bit. And later on in the dressing room where I thought I'd be alone, she knocks on the door. She goes, "Mary, can I come in and break with you?" I'm like, "Sure, come on in." So she pulls over a chair. She pats the chair. She goes, "Here, sit next to me." And she brought me in close to her. And she goes, "So," and she leans in. She goes, "Tell me about yourself." And I told her that my parents used to talk about going to the Cotton Club every Saturday night, and they'd get the same table, and you would always come over to the table and go, "You're back again?" And so if it weren't for you, they might not have gotten married, and I wouldn't be here with you now. That's what I said to her. She got the biggest kick out of that. But she was quite wonderful, actually, and she made a point of going to the show director and my stage manager and telling them how much she enjoyed that experience. That was my, I was like, "She did? Wow, okay."
And let me be totally shallow. Was she as beautiful in person as I remember her being while I was growing up watching her?
Yes. And I think not just aesthetically, she takes very good care of herself, but her persona, it mattered to her to be her best self, even at a theme park. Do you know what I mean? And that's just how she carried herself in the world. I learned a lot about who we may become in our lives just by making up our minds to be fully authentic and kind.
And I also remember the day that you interviewed Nell Carter, which was an amazing experience, right? Kind of larger than life, but amazing. Do you have any stories about that day?
Well, just the fact that she asked me, "Can you undo my bra here for a minute? Because I'm so hot. I'm so, oh God, oh God, if they walk in here right now, I'm so fired." It was actually kind of funny. We both laughed about it later. I'm like, "Well, I still got my job, Nell, and your bra's on, so we're past all that." I made her laugh.
So it's almost like her breasts said, "Give me a break." there we go.
I'm glad you said that and I didn't.
And you also talked to Jim Brown, who recently passed away, an amazing life, but you got to talk to Jim Brown, the actor and football legend.
Yes, and he had a strong political side. And you know what was nice talking to the elders that had gone through the 60s? You know, I was around 10 and they were maybe like around 20. So, you know, we know a lot more at that age of what our parents saw. And what was so neat is when we'd get back there, we'd talk as if we were relatives, no matter who was there. They would just, you know, just bringing up what we went through and like, "Yeah, my parents said that for them. And well, I remember a time and I remember." And then they're like, "But we're so proud of Disney that they're putting this on." I'm like, "Yeah." It was great. It was great to see how our world has changed, and it's still changing for the better. I think what we're learning, especially in our country, if you aren't able to be tolerant of those that are different, your life's not going to be different. And your life can be better when you start to learn people different than you.
And are there any other lessons like that that you learned through your path with diversity or being the person helping move things forward or creating change?
You know, my grandfather, I think I might have told you this, he was married to W.E.B. Du Bois's godchild, and he knew W.E.B. Du Bois. In fact, one of his books that I had was signed by him to my granddad.
And just for our listeners, please define who that is, Du Bois.
Sure. W.E.B. Du Bois was one of the founders of the NAACP. And it was at a time when we were just starting to wake up that we can't treat anybody as any less than or greater than any other person just because of how their eyes are set or their color of their skin or the type of hair. It's who they are as a person. How do they treat other people? How do they help those by reaching out a hand to bring them up to the next step for them? And what I've learned from all those people I interviewed over the years, it's people that reached out to them that gave them confidence, that gave them a nod, a pat on the back, and advice. And that's, I see you do that. I do that. I feel like whenever there's a way you can just give a little encouragement to someone, even if it's someone you'll never see again, you're changing the world.
Well, you know, Mary, I think that my experience getting to perform with you and listeners, Mary and I did about 9,000 shows together at the Comedy Warehouse over the 10 years we worked there together.
And in Africa.
Yes, yes. We'll get into that later. But your approach towards who you were on stage really helped me as an openly gay man be more comfortable being the authentic version of myself. And I don't know if I've told you before how much I appreciate that, having your wonderful example and support in honesty. I think it's hard for young performers, right? The hardest thing to learn is authenticity, which is so counterintuitive, right?
Well, give me an example. When you say of authenticity, certainly there's the honest words that we use, but talk to me a little bit more about what it is to be authentic and why that's important.
Well, I think in your instance, it was always fun to go out after shows with Mary because people would constantly stop her after we had just done a show together and tell Mary that she was their favorite. And I was completely invisible. And it was always funny.
I paid them.
It was always funny to me. But I just think you never had any artifice about presenting yourself as you were. And you were very comfortable with the audience drawing their own conclusion. And I remember thinking, if I'm cool with myself, the audience can just draw whatever conclusions they want to, and that's fine.
Mm. It was so wonderful that we had the support of our leaders to be who we were, as long as we kept that Disney line. But the world had changed, and so the line had changed, and so did we. And we helped change others. And how many people came up to us after shows and told us that, you know, hey, you're my role model, or hey, you know what, that one, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think we helped everyone out there through their laughter, but through also their learning of how we can all do what we want to do in this world.
Yeah.
That was Walt's dream, right?
I think that we can all do what we want to in this world is a wonderful transition. Mary and I are going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Travels with Travels with Triggs.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got the authors of some of the new food books we're super excited about. From quick meals amped up by the Asian pantry to a tour of modern African home cooking to the most wonderfully written guide, Comparing Flavors, it's our spring cookbook roundup, coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's new show, Electric Mountain, bringing you a choice selection of dance music from back in the day to today. I'll also feature a guest DJ every week spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us each and every Saturday night from midnight to 2 a.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local. Yeah, let's go.
And we are back. Travels with Triggs. Today we are talking to Mary Thompson Hunt, a Disney legend, someone with whom I did over 9,000 shows at the Comedy Warehouse on Pleasure Island in Orlando, Florida, doing improvisational comedy. And Mary, one of the first questions I want to ask you is, what is your personal definition of improv or improvisational work?
Well, and when you improvise, you make it up. You use your imagination. You have an idea that this could work. Maybe you even see it in your mind's eye and you go for it. And I feel like that's what we do on stage as improvisers. We just jump in and you're going to sink or swim. But even if you're sinking, you're going to float back up and then you're going to learn to swim.
And what would you say in terms of your persona in front of an audience or who you strove to be in front of an audience? What are some of the buzzwords? How would you describe yourself on stage as a comedian?
Hopefully playful, warm, funny, alert, attentive to what's happening backstage, in the house. Maybe something's just dropped or whatever. We'd make a joke about it. That's what I loved about the warehouse. If someone dropped a tray of drinks, you know, we'd have something funny and the house would laugh and the waiter would laugh. We'd make levity of the moment and move forward. And that's what improv's about. You take that last moment and you make gold out of it.
Yeah, you're using everything.
Mm-hmm.
So just to satisfy my own curiosity, what are three words you would have used to describe me when we were working together?
Funny. One. Two. Snarky. That's a word I got from you. But I mean that in a good way, especially when you didn't want to be cruel or mean, but you wanted to been heard. And because you weren't mean, but you would get your point across. And to work with you, surprising. You would surprise us too.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, it is.
I remember, audience, we would pop through these doors to sing a song about a guest we had interviewed. And the minute Mary popped through those doors, the audience loved her. And I did not have that quality. And I'd say the first year of the 10 years Mary and I performed together, I was a little jealous. I was probably a little petty at times. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm an idiot. I need to shut up, get past myself, and try to learn that skill as much as I can. And so I grew a lot performing with you. What drew you initially to doing improvisational comedy, Mary?
I was in a high school musical. It was called Alice. It was a takeoff of Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass using all Beatle music. And
it sounds like a copyright nightmare. It sounds like you probably broke some laws. But anyway, go back.
Well, our high school art teacher was the director and set designer, and it was huge. Schools came in to see us. It was a lot, but I didn't think I'd ever get the role of Alice. I'm not blonde. I'm not Caucasian. But do you know what? In my heart, I realized as I learned the role, curiouser and curiouser, and let's go down the rabbit hole. I was Alice. And that was my first. And then one show, we had all these fourth and fifth graders brought in. They wouldn't stop talking. So I was singing The Long and Winding Road, and I started singing, "Please let me sing this song. That's all I want to do." And I kept rhyming, and that was my first improv ever. The whole cast was behind the wings on both sides at the back door. The parents were coming in. The show director came in, and they were all, and I just kept making up the song because the kids weren't going to stop singing. So I did it for me. And that was my first improv. Did I ever tell you that?
No, that's a great story.
Wow. Yeah.
that was my first improv. So then when I went to an audition in college for a group, I went, well, I did it in high school, and I got into a group, and that's where I met the first group I was in, First Amendment. There was Lisa Mende and Dom Herrera and George Wilson, and later we started our own group, Broadway Local, and then, as you know, Comedy Warehouse came after that. And I worked with some amazing people, including yourself, sir.
Oh, thank you so much.
You really are. You're one of those people that just made us laugh till we cry.
Well, Mary and I had a lot of adventures together. We rode our bicycles from Orlando, Florida to Miami a couple of times for AIDS service organizations. And improvisation took Mary and I to Africa. And we were in Yaoundé in Cameroon with the American school. Mary and I taught. And what are some of your favorite memories about the adventure that improv brought into your life, Mary?
I think one of the biggest rules, the first rule anyone will probably learn in a class 101 is yes and. So if I say you're a pumpkin, you say, yes, I'm a pumpkin, and tonight's my night to bake an apple pie. Is it going to hurt them the way I was hurt? You know, yes, and. And I started saying yes and to things in life that I ordinarily wouldn't, because is it going to hurt me? Is it going to hurt anyone? Is someone going to maybe die? No, you just haven't done this before. Yes, and. And so I started opening myself to new experiences and therefore new friendships and relationships. And that was all from improv. If for no other reason, anyone listening to this, you're curious about improv, it doesn't have to be because you want to be funny or a comedian or an actor, but look at what it does to how you make your choices. And I think I've never met anyone who hasn't said, it made my life so different. Did you find that as a teacher?
Yes. And I've also always thought that improv teaches you at its best and most fundamental to explore possibility instead of limitation. What can we accomplish? What story can we tell? Let's not worry about what we can't do. Let's maximize what we can.
Yes. Well put.
There's a story that's very funny to me. Mary and I were performing in Africa, and Mary decided to ask this youth choir to be our opening act. And that's fine. You know, parents love seeing their kids perform. And so I turned to Mary and I said, so what are they going to sing? And Mary said, you know, it's a youth choir. They'll sing some songs. It's like, but what are they going to sing? And she didn't know. And I thought, well, what harm can there be? It's not going to be inappropriate. And so in Africa, in Cameroon, on a tennis court that they had turned into a stage with people watching from the bleachers, about 20 beautiful children came up and sang, sometimes I feel like a motherless child, followed up by gonna go down to the river when I die. And that was our opening act. So again, Mary, thank you so much for that. Thank you.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. It didn't dawn on me until you brought it up later. Like, yeah, you're right. I guess we could have brought a little more cheer to Africa.
But you know what? I don't think I'd remember that if the kids hadn't sang that song. It's a priceless memory to me now.
Yeah. And the parents were all proud. But oh my God, you're right. That's so funny.
Now, when you look back on your career as an improviser, what is one of your favorite stories or one of your favorite moments from being on stage? What's one of your favorite moments?
Oh, gosh. I know there's so many. I remember when Dom Herrera, I worked with him in New York for years as an improviser. That was the first group that I performed with at length. Him and Michael Patrick King and Lisa Mende and George Wilson. And on stage, at the Comedy Warehouse, Dom came into a scene. I guess he got permission to do it, and it surprised me. And I just thought, two worlds colliding, you know, Comedy Warehouse and Broadway Local Dom Herrera. Here we are together. And that was one of my favorite memories, just because it was my past and my present.
And if you were going to, you know, let's say we could get everyone you improvised with together in a room, what's something you would like to say to all of those people about how they affected you or what you learned during your time with them? What's the message?
Thank you. Thank you, because I know that my mind often worked in different ways, and that's why we were all there. We each had something other people didn't have. And sometimes our greatest gift could also be our greatest hindrance. So yes, I had this crazy imagination, and you know, we would be the nut in the nutshell trying to escape, you know, like, okay, it's another Mary scene. But what I appreciated from the cast is after a while, we knew how to yield for this person and yield for that person. And they knew how to yield for me, and they knew how to save me from me. And I learned how to save others from them. So it's, you know, forgive, forgive, forgive. That was a Chris Oyen thing, right? And move on. And
I
so I think some of the best things I learned in improv is just to yes and go forward.
I remember when, you know, O.J. Simpson just died. And I remember we were in a loop for about a year where the audience just kept yelling out O.J. Simpson. And it was very difficult to be funny against something so horrific. And we wrote this sketch where we played elderly jurors as though the O.J. Simpson trial had been going on for a quarter of a century. And I remember you playing the juror as an old Black woman. And one of our coworkers kept going backstage going, why is she playing it that way? Why is she playing it that way? She sounds like an old Black woman. And I remember turning to him and saying, well, what do you think she's going to be? That's who she is. The last question that I have for you, Mary, is, so we know what you would say to your coworkers, what is something you would like to tell every audience that you ever performed in front of? What's something you would like to say to them about the relationship between you as a performer and them as the receivers?
First thing that comes to mind is thank you. We had so many regulars that would come every year, that they raised their kids coming every year. Then we had regulars that lived in the area that would stop by, and they would know to say, hey, you've been here 2 years now. You've been here 7 years now. And how many years? We were there many years. I would just say to everybody, if they're out there listening, take an improv class, even if it's a one-day workshop, and just see what happens to you. You're going to laugh. You're going to surprise yourself. And that's what life's about, that we keep growing. And I think improv is a way to grow more of who you are in a light and lighthearted. So yeah, if you're listening to this and you've never taken an improv class, go take one. You won't regret it.
And what makes you the most proud of the time you have spent improvising or performing comedy?
Honestly, that I made my living at it. We were at the Comedy Warehouse for 18 years. And then in New York, I was there doing it for 5 prior to that. And then after here and there, but I think it makes me the proudest that I stayed with it because it was a passion. And as I grew, my work grew, ideally.
You know, I think that's a wonderful way to end, in the hopes that whatever your passion is, you find your way through it and find inspiration with it and learn and make your own world bigger and the world a better place. So, Mary, thank you for being the guest on Travels with Triggs this week. To our listening audience, thank you for your time and attention. I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll see you next time on Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where are we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Listen to Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10. The best of rural life and agriculture for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. That's Farm and Country, Saturday morning at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.